Weekly.
Is MMO Weekly.
Welcome, welcome, welcome once again. The show that comes to you once a week, covering the Hollywood week that was, preparing you for the Holly Weird week to come. I am your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike, and this is MMO Weekly.
This is our weekly variety show. We're back to normal hours, yes. I would say. And we got a Holly Weird week to come, for sure. Starting with Mike and Oscar's very next episode, which will be a weird one.
You're very excited about this.
I'm kind of excited about it. But, you know, we got two unique episodes because we do our variety show. We interact with the audience, which is wonderfully weird,
yes,
as well.
That's so very true. And we look forward to doing that every week.
So is it the Holly Weird week that was and the Holly Weird week to come? Is that the new...
Well, I just don't think, I think that'd be lazy. I like very to good. Spice it up, but this is MMO Weekly, hashtag MMO Weekly, hashtag MMOW. This is where we go over all the news and stories that happened in La La Land this past week and setting you up for what you can expect coming out of the movie industry this week, always with an eye look towards and fixated on the next year's upcoming Oscars, which are now, Michael, like 300 and some odd days away, even though it'll be early in February 2020 on their show. It'll be February 9th, 2020, so about 3 weeks earlier. That's kind of, I guess, the biggest news for our business as far as any kind of Academy Awards news right now.
Right. We just covered the way too early Oscar predictions, and it was a two-parter, and we're very proud of it because it's 100% accurate. And
yeah, you can take that to the bank.
We're never wrong, no. And it kicked off awards season. We're going to be reviewing movies again this week, kind of starting today with some 2019s, and I'm really excited because I was able to watch some films this week, Mike.
Go ahead, tell me about it. Let's start off with what we're watching. Give me a song.
It's what we're watching!
Thank you.
Go ahead. Beautiful voice. You're welcome.
Live drops. That's what we do best.
The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. This is on Netflix right now. Just a new entry for Netflix or Netflix. Chiwetel,
it's a streaming service made out of cheap wood.
Chiwetel Ejiofor. He made a windmill out of cheap wood. Go figure.
Oh, all right. And in this movie? Or
actually,
just like
his son,
a hobby?
Actually, his son did, and it saved like a whole African village. Oh. But they made you suffer for like 3 hours before that happened.
3 hours,
no,
you
say? It was like 2 hours. But it's a very good movie. It's very well made. Very well performed. Chiwetel Ejiofor, Oscar nominated actor, has been a lot of great stuff, takes the director's chair in this one, and I thought he did a great job. The butler from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is the chief of the village here, which was a fun
nice
little...
to know he's been moving up the military ranks there.
Yeah.
See by skip for The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind. Now we're going to try to implement this, our old see by skip game, letting you know what is worth your time and what isn't, and maybe if you're bored you may want to see. So if you really like it, you could buy it. If you think it's something worth seeing, you see it. And if you think it's something worth skipping altogether, you can get rid of it. Mike, see by skip.
I will see it. I guess I bought it because I own a Netflix subscription.
I don't think that's how that works, but okay. All right.
I will subscribe to it. See by skip, subscribe. I don't know. Mike, I watched Instant Family on VOD.
It's got a lot of good reviews.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah?
I really did. I thought it worked very well. The drama worked a little better than the comedy, but it did have its moments. Look, this is a thoroughly complex situation. Foster care is.
Right.
It's a very serious responsibility, and they don't take it lightly, which was refreshing. Mm. But there's also, like I said, a lot of comedy involved. The biggest problem we had with the trailer when the people get arrested is still kind of the biggest problem with the movie. They kind of gloss over that.
That's not good.
But that plot hole, I guess, aside, this really worked, and it's an emotional movie, and scene to scene, I really enjoyed it. It's about parenting. It's about working with young people and the impossibility at times that is. So a fun movie. So seek it out on demand right now. I also watched Border, Mike. This was as weird as advertised. but it's kind of insanely watchable. This is the foreign film that got nominated for Best Hair and Makeup, and a worthy nomination, no doubt about it. But this is a WTF-er. I think we were very curious about this one. Curiosity kind of killed the cat that is me here, but I definitely liked the watch. It's just, it's a bit of a letdown, I would say.
Yeah, I heard the plot about this. It had it spoiled for me, and I was on record about this one being that they're werewolves. That was my guess going in.
It is definitely a fantasy, and if you're curious...
It's not werewolves.
If you're curious, check it out, but I add many points for ambition. I thought it's impeccably well-directed. The scenes work in many a case. It drags a little bit here and there, but it didn't stick the landing for me, unfortunately. So, I watched West Side Story. This took me 4 watches. It's streaming now on Netflix.
I'm surprised you took the dive.
I had to take it in bits and pieces. It's like 2.5 hours. Look, it's not my cup of tea, but...
Aren't you glad Steven Spielberg's remaking it?
Oh, no. I'm glad I've saw it, because some of these songs are going to live in infamy. They've stood the test of time already. But the cinematography is phenomenal. The production design, the sets in this movie is really something to be in awe over. They put on a clinic with the dancing. You know, these are thoroughly talented people. The story was progressive for its place and time. I think, you know, in the late 60s there, that's a very progressive story about race and racial equality and you know, the two gangs, the Sharks and the whatever the other one was called.
Jets. Sharks and the Jets.
They're fighting, basically. You know, one's a white gang, the other's a Puerto Rican gang, and they're fighting for that reason.
A lot of finger snapping in this one.
Yeah, it didn't work on me. I was a bit bored a few times, and I took it in bits and pieces, but I do, as a film critic, I do give it credit where it was due.
You're being very nice to West Side Story. I watched it for the first time when I was, I don't know, 10, 11. I couldn't stand it. It was one of my mother's favorite movies, and I was so lost and just bored, and okay. I did not like it.
Yeah, it's not a family favorite of mine. Actually, when I told people I was watching it, they were like, why?
Yeah.
But I did watch it. It's another Best Picture to cross off my list. I've seen the vast majority of Best Pictures at this place and time. I did like the Feinberg thing years ago, back in college, where I was like, I'm going to watch all the nominated films, and if I can, I'm getting there. We got an Oscars podcast, so I have a chance. On Amazon Prime right now, we have The Makers of Free Solo. Their previous film is called Meru. It's another mountain climbing adventure story. It is a bit heavy at times, but basically we have elite mountain climbers filming even more elite mountain climbers. And of course, yet again, the director, Jimmy Chin, and his wife, Elizabeth Chai Vasayelyi, botching that name again. I got to look it up.
No, I think you nailed it.
They do a phenomenal job, but they're in the thick of things, and he's out there with a camera climbing.
Yeah, they won their Oscar. Can they, like, get off the mountainside now? Maybe put the camera somewhere else.
I think that's what they do, Mike. But it's a harrowing stuff, and there's some injuries involved, which is just
crazy.
So suspenseful. Mike, I watched Brexit.
I've seen this, and I did not like it.
This is Benedict Cumberbatch doing his British version of Christian Bale's version, Bale's version of Dick Cheney here.
Without the weight, yeah.
Right. Definitely drives home the fact that winning at all costs in politics, probably not the best thing to do. It's about Brexit. It's about the campaign to get them to vote leave. The scope of this movie really falters at times. It feels like just a chamber piece for much of the movie.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you agree, but they only show like one news montage where you finally get like a wider scope that this is actually affecting the whole country. Otherwise, they just have a bus in an abandoned parking lot or with like 20 people maybe. And we're supposed to like extrapolate that that's the whole country voting one way or the other.
Yeah, like I said, it did seem like it was leaving out conveniently. If you're going to talk about biased pictures, I think... like, that to me is a bit more biased, I understand, than Vice, and I understand people will disagree about that, you included, but that just seems so heavy-handed, I couldn't even get through it.
It is heavy-handed, but, you know, good performance from Cumberbatch and many others, so it's a well-acted film, well-made
film. Nice bald cap.
Yeah. Paddleton. This is the Ray Romano, Mark Duplass movie on Netflix. They advertised it. So if you watch the Indie Spirits, they kind of did some shtick that they carried over from the film. Much more of a drama than a comedy. It's really not a funny movie. I didn't laugh once. But the drama kind of works. It's about a guy dying of cancer, and you know, it's in the trailers, and his best buddy, they're kind of together doing the road trip thing, kind of dealing with it. And I'm impressed with both of their dramatic chops in this. It doesn't really go much further than that. It's not a dramedy, like I said. I think if they made some of the comedy work, you know, maybe they would have had a chance at having more of a hit here. But it's a well-done movie on Netflix, 2019 movie yet again. Then, Mike, I watched a couple comedy specials on Netflix. Ken Jeong, You Complete Me Ho. That's his wife's last name is Ho.
Okay.
So he talks Crazy Rich Asians, being a doctor. He talks all of his family dynamics, which is fun to see. He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
Bert Kreischer, Secret Time. I'm not a huge fan of him.
Of him or of the gimmick?
The gimmick is bad. I don't know why he needs to be shirtless.
It's like his whole thing. I don't get it either, but I like Bert Kreischer, the comedian. I think he's very funny.
When he talks about his daughters, that's my favorite parts. When he talks about his like family exploits ziplining, they have a day ziplining, and he makes that really funny. And so it's worth watching in that regard. I did get my share of laughs out of it. Sebastian Maniscalco's Stay Hungry. This is another new comedy special on Netflix. I thought he's very funny. He's great at physical comedy and making fun of his dad.
Yeah, he looks like your cousin. That's why you were more, basically had more is appeal my to him than Bert Kreischer.
We're probably related. Probably. He's from Sicily as well. I have one more. I watched Dinosaur 13, the Todd Douglas Miller doc. This is, again, the director of Apollo 11. We covered it in the Way Too Early Oscars in a profile there. Dinosaur 13 is about discovering the largest T-Rex and most complete T-Rex skeleton ever recovered from the Badlands. Once I turned this on, I realized I've seen it before.
Oh, really? Okay.
So that was strange, but it's still a very watchable documentary.
You would think you wouldn't forget having seen a documentary about the largest Tyrannosaurus skeleton.
I have seen so many movies.
Right, but that's not a plot that kind of gets repeated a lot, is my point.
You're right. You're right, but my brain only has so much space here. Fair. And finally, I finished True Detective Season 3. In my opinion, for my money, superior to Season 2, not as good as Season 1. Great performance from Mahershala Ali. Carmen Ejogo was awesome as well. And I even think Stephen Dorff does a great job, even though I would say the makeup and hairstyling for Stephen Dorff's character really fell flat. That looked just so goofy to me. They should have just had all of that shot at night whenever he was involved, because he looked ridiculous. He looked like Stephen Dorff with just gruesome Mr. Burns. Or Hans Moleman.
Yeah.
But he looked bad.
Hans Moleman's the one that gets the football. You did a very economical job getting through a lot of titles there. Let's see if I skip this at the end. Pick one to see, one to buy, one to skip of the movies, taking out True Detective, which is a TV show. If you had to pick one, gun to your head.
I would skip West Side Story, watching that again, for certain.
Probably safe.
You know, I didn't see anything great, but I would see The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, and I probably would buy Instant Family, which I did buy Instant Family. I rented it.
So this is a literal see, buy, skip for you. Very good.
Right.
Yeah, I just sat in silence after our interview with Clayton Davis for like a solid 40 hours.
That was Tuesday. That was day 10.
I just sat.
Of our recording binge.
Zanned out.
Good.
I enjoyed the silence. I'm not sure who got my nephew off the bus for a couple days.
You watched replays of the Cohen trial?
My
or
dog must have been starving. I just didn't move. But I've been watching a lot of TV, which I know isn't the point of this podcast, but I'm a big Survivor fan, and I just plain didn't realize that season 38 had started, because it had the gall to start during Oscar week, and they should have known better. Right. It's a kind of a new twist in that. It's a take on an old twist. It's not bad. I'm interested to see where it goes. The Challenge on MTV is like the perfect trash TV show. It's just, it's so much fabricated drama amongst people that have never held a real job or known what responsibility is and have no business being on TV in the first place. It's amazing. It's off to one of its most unique starts in a while, too, because the first three episodes have taken out three past champions and like three heavy hitters that the show kind of relies on for its fabricated drama.
So now the Challenge, how different is this than real world road rules. That was
it's
the last time.
It's exactly that. It's exactly the same thing, except road rules isn't a thing anymore. Like, instead of taking just real world alums and taking just road rules alums, now they've branched out. Like, there's some Big Brother alums in there, and Big Brother's like my favorite reality show because I'm not a real person, more just an amalgamation of marketing ideals. but they take like Big Brother alums, they take like X on the Beach alums, which is a UK show, and they have all of them live together in one house. So it is kind of interesting from just the standpoint of like human interaction and how these people that really have just like, if you ask them who's president, I'm pretty sure you're going to get mixed answers.
I can't watch reality TV. It makes me feel like real feelings, surprisingly. And I don't want to feel those.
Oh, that's not good. No, these are not people that should make you feel anything.
I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. And then you add the commercials, which just make me jealous, envious, and thoroughly just with the need to buy everything that I don't have money for.
We've talked about this. You are the perfect target for any kind of marketing and commercials.
I'm very vulnerable to it, and I need to stay away from it. That's why I see so many movies and watch so many streams.
That makes sense. So when they started introducing commercials before the previews of movies, that's why you don't go to movies early, isn't it? You hate going to movies early.
Watching the commercials.
All right. This is all coming together.
So much. And now that we go to like off-peak, movie watching on weekdays or Thursdays or whatever, I thoroughly enjoy the reserved seating factor and when we can get that. Or if I have the A-list and I know I have a seat on a, relatively easy night to get a seat.
Mike drives me fucking crazy with movies. I love going early and watching the previews.
I used to be you, and I loved watching previews. But now that we're going to however many movies a week when we're kicking, I can't handle it.
You stroll in a casual 10 minutes after the posted showtime. It drives me fucking crazy.
I would rather tweet in the lobby than be in there watching like cars that I can't buy advertise on television.
Can you imagine if you got so susceptible to advertising that you leased a Lexus that you have no business?
I can't do it, Mike.
I've also been watching a lot of like old video game based documentaries, which I didn't even realize was a niche, but apparently exists.
Wow.
The idea of people collecting video games and taking good care of them, and like there's these people that exist that like dedicated their basements or their garages to actual museums of like old video game, old media history, and it fascinates me. Like in glass cases and LED lighting, and it's really, really crazy.
Is this on YouTube? Where is this?
It's on Amazon Prime. The best one I saw so far was called Nintendo Quest. It had the premise of this Canadian kid, basically, not just a regular guy, being challenged by the filmmaker to collect all 700 plus old NES cartridges that were made in a 30-day period without the internet. Like, he had to drive around to different stores and like do his research and shit.
Wow, I thought I had no life.
it was crazy. I mean, it's really, this kid goes from Canada all the way down to like Oklahoma and Florida and stuff in search of these things in a 30-day period.
I watched 15 things this week and me judging him. the poor guy. No, I guess that's cool.
It's nice to have your passion, I guess.
Yeah, if
you're going to be passionate about it. I also watched something called The Bits of Yesterday and some show called NES Pursuit. That's, again, like I said, it's all on Amazon Prime. It's a niche watch, but if you're the type that was raised on gaming from birth like me and my brother were, it's something that definitely is going to speak to the nostalgia in you.
And is Bits spelled with a Y?
No, it's an I. It's a hard I, too.
I see.
Bits! Yeah.
Oh.
I think that's the pronunciation.
Well, I guess I will do in kind when we have that word come up.
So as far as a see by skip, look, I know it's not a movie. Go see The Challenge. Just watch The Challenge. If you take in an episode of The Challenge and it doesn't hook you, you're the type, this is stupid. These people have no lives. Yeah, I know. That's the point.
So you're buying this or you're seeing this?
I will buy The Challenge until I am in the dirt and pushing up daisies. I am buying The Challenge. If you're going to see any of the Nintendo docs, really check out the Nintendo Quest. I think that was a really unique thing. And to have this documentary filmmaker who, like, he knows the guy, the subject of the doc, and it was like a friend-to-friend challenge. It's like me challenging you to pursue your passion, and I just happen to know how to make movies. It's a really interesting dynamic playing out on screen.
I feel guilty for making fun of him. I may have to watch that now. It's
guilt. It's quick, too.
You better not make me feel feelings.
It is real people, so it might. But it's a quick 85-minute, 90-minute watch. You can get away with not seeing the NES Pursuit. It's not for me. I guess it's based on an old YouTube show that went away. Now they're doing it again for Prime. You could skip that as far as I'm concerned, even if you are the hardest of hardcore gamers. I just didn't think there was a lot to there. sorry, not sorry, I guess, but let's move on to happier times and talk about some audience interaction that we did this week, Michael.
Yeah, last week, 6 Degrees of MMO that we did on the Sunday Indie Spirits recap episode, we scheduled Florence Pugh of Fighting With My Family, Lady Macbeth. She's going to be in a lot of cool things this year. Florence Pugh to, of course, Black Panther soundtrack extraordinaire, and I think he's kind of a big deal otherwise.
I've heard of him, yes.
Kendrick Lamar.
It's like the biggest name in hip-hop, no big deal.
Pretty much. So, first entry here was Merc with a movie blog, at movie blog Merc, M-E-R-C, says, Florence Pugh to Liam Neeson in The Commuter. Liam Neeson to Forrest Whitaker in Taken 3. Did you remember Forrest Whitaker in Taken 3?
I don't think I've ever seen Taken 3.
Thank God.
It's like, how many different people can this guy lose?
Me neither. So Forrest Whitaker is with Kendrick Lamar in Black Panther. Right there. Bing, bang, boom.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That's really good. And I also like how Merc here didn't bother typing out the names at the start of each chain. It's like, it's not Florence Pugh, it's FP. It's not Liam Neeson, it's LN. I like that. A little shorthand for the people in the industry.
Just to make it seem even more impossibly short.
Right, exactly. Take up less space. Less space.
Nice debut, movie blog Merc.
Let's go to Yasna, again, a frequent flyer. You've heard their name here before. Florence Pugh is in King Lear with Emma Thompson, who's in Late Night, and we just talked about that, and the Sun making the Sundance circuit right now with Mindy Kaling, who's in Jay-Z's video Family Feud with Rashida Jones.
Nice.
Rashida Jones herself in Black-ish Season 3, Episode 21 with Tracee Ellis Ross, who's a hostess at the 2015 BET Awards, in which Kendrick Lamar won Best Male Hip-Hop Artist.
I like this.
God, movie. I love Yasna. That's so good great. At this.
A hostess at the BET Awards. Kendrick Lamar winning stuff. That's very cool. Robert Doherty at Robert Doc DOC 1984 says Florence Pugh was in Little Drummer Girl with Michael Shannon, who's in Shape of Water with Richard Jenkins, who's in Hall Pass with Owen Wilson, who's in Night at the Museum 2 with Amy Adams. Can you believe Amy Adams was in that? Anyway, Amy Adams is in Arrival with Forrest Whitaker.
Another Forrest Whitaker.
Who's in Black Panther before Lamar's All the Stars plays.
I love that. And I also love that Robert Doc went on to say, I commented that I couldn't believe Michael Shannon didn't get nominated in the supporting actor race for Shape of Water.
Yeah, we had him high.
Robert Doc made the statement that it was Shape of Water and not Three Billboards. That should have had two nominees in the supporting actor category.
Tough call, but yeah, we could agree with him at the end of the day. We both had them high.
Another Hall of Famer here, Nebis Ben making his return here, Ben Miller. Florence Pugh will star in Midsommar, directed by, of course, Ari Aster. We're very excited
about
that.
Just previewed it.
Who directed Hereditary, starring, naturally, Toni Collette, the should-be Best Actress winner of 2018, who was in Please Stand By with Dakota Fanning, who was in Ocean's 8 with Rihanna, who did the song Loyalty alongside with Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, Please Stand By was on Hulu when I had it, and I watched that. That was the last year movie.
Did they find the largest T-Rex bones of all time in that movie?
They did not.
You got them confused?
It was actually a nice story, but it didn't work thoroughly well. Dakota Fanning's a good actress. Toni Collette, I think, was in charge of the school, or the whatever Dakota Fanning attended. I don't have recall.
Seminary.
Because my brain is filled.
There were nuns searching for dinosaurs.
They might as well have been. I don't remember. But Rihanna to Kendrick Lamar, I like that with the song Loyalty. Ben Miller always putting out good stuff. And he's speaking to us because we're really excited about Ari Aster's new film.
We did just do a whole bunch on that about during our 2019 picks and year in preview. So definitely go check out that two-parter that Mike told you about at the top of the show.
This is going to be hard to pick the winner. Mark Burr. Burgundy at the One, spelled out O-N-E, the One Hansen with an E. He says, Pugh starred in Fighting With My Family with Nick Frost, who was in The World's End with Patty Considine, who was in Dead Man's Shoes.
That's the old English pronunciation.
Toby Cabell, who was in War for the Planet of the Apes with Andy Serkis, who was in Black Panther, which contains songs on the soundtrack by Kendrick Lamar.
I like it. I like it a lot. And I like the Andy Serkis playing Andy Serkis, or playing at least a real human being, gets a little shout out there, as opposed to, and in Black Panther anyway, as opposed to all his work that he's done otherwise and is known for, all the mocap stuff. But let's go to the winner, and it's a first time, I think. A first time submission who's going to win the round this week. Audrey Radajack at A-U-D-R-E-Y _ Radajack, R-A-T-A-J-A-C-K. Audrey put forth Florence Pugh. It's going to be in Greta Gerwig's Little Women, which again was part of our preview, which also stars Timothy Chalmers. The only thing that would have made that better is if she called him T. Chals. That would have really made me smile. But Timothy Chalmers, who's in Kid Cudi's Birthday Party with Pete Davidson and Kanye West.
That's great.
Kanye collaborated with Kendrick Lamar on the album Life of Pablo. I love everything about that chain. That is a very us chain. Congratulations, Aubrey Radijack. Yeah. You win.
Mentioning Pete Davidson just because, you know, having a birthday party connect people.
Yes.
Which is brilliant. And then how do you know that? I don't know. But of course, Little Women. So that kind of, you know, even the playing field, you know, Ben Miller had Midsommar from Ari Aster in there. Greta Gerwig's movie. We're excited about that too.
It mixes enough of real life movie stuff that we do here, along with giving Timothy Chalamet a new nickname that nobody else has ever called him, which I can appreciate. So Aubrey Radijack, congratulations. You get bragging rights this week. Thank you everybody for your submissions. And we remind you, if you want to submit to the 6 Degrees of MMO, a game that we play here, we try to do it every week. We want to hear your submissions. You can reach out to us, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook or Instagram, and primarily at MM and Oscar on Twitter. That's where a lot of these submissions go. And we try to retweet every submission we get, if nothing else. And you could be next. You could win all the bragging rights that this week has to offer and be the king of Hollywood for the week. All right, Mike, let's set it up. Give us a new challenge here.
I was thinking a lot about this. I don't know if this is going to be too easy, but here we go. We just talked about The Irishman. We just talked about all the Sundance movies in the last episode. And a big hit from Sundance was The Farewell. So Awkwafina is going to be at the end of this chain. And The Irishman is of course, directed by Martin Scorsese, our pal Marty there.
Sure.
So we're going to go Martin Scorsese to Awkwafina. Get as creative as you can. Sometimes if it looks like there's a lot of links, you guys just blow it out of the water and give us some insane-o answer. So it won't just be the easy answer or the 1, 2, 3. We're going to pick something with the height of creativity here. So next week's challenge, Martin Scorsese to Awkwafina. Have fun with it.
And either bonus points or penalty if you connect it to Awkwafina, the water company. I'm not sure which way I'm feeling. It'll depend on the day, quite frankly. But yeah, get those submissions to us. Hashtag 6 degrees of MMO. And Mike, we had a question this week as well.
Yeah, this was cool. At Michelle Foes, that's MICHELFOWS. He asked us a question, and I just kind of ran with it. He said, maybe you guys can discuss this question on the podcast. What is the best male acting winning duo of in any year? A best actor / supporting actor. Can anything beat Javier Bardem / Daniel Day-Lewis in 2008? Please do a female actors 1-2. So we're going to do both of those. I'll start with the ladies. 2013, you had Cate Blanchett and Blue Jasmine, and Lupita Nyong'o in 12 Years a Slave.
Yeah, Lupita Nyong'o was... I don't think I've ever seen Blue Jasmine, to be honest.
I didn't love the movie. I loved her performance.
I know, but I've heard Blanchett was a dynamo in that, and Lupita Nyong'o was awesome in 12 Years a Slave.
2007, Marion Cotillard in La Vie en Rose, and La Vie en Rose,
and that title.
Tilda Swinton and Michael Clayton. Those were best actress, supporting actress.
Michael Clayton kind of gets overlooked for me as far as great movies of the past 15, 20 years.
Talk about Scenes in the Mirror, Mike.
Yeah,
follow true. The mirror, and you'll know who's going to win. And that proved itself once again this year, even though last year did not.
Tom Wilkinson doesn't get enough scenes with prostitutes on screen, for my liking, quite frankly.
Oh, Tom Wilkinson needs more stuff these days. Let's get back to the Tom Wilkinson golden age.
Where he was in everything.
In everything. In 2006, Helen Mirren in The Queen and Jennifer Hudson in Dreamgirls. That's a tough one.
That's
going to
be tough to beat, yeah.
And like I should have mentioned this up top. I'm just going back to 2000 because it was way too hard to go best ever. So maybe we'll have to revisit this question. But that was 2013, 2007, 2006. I don't have to go much further back. 2005, Charlize Theron in Monster and Renee Zellweger in Cold Mountain. Renee Zellweger gets a lot of, you know, flack these days, but I thought she was pretty great in Cold Mountain.
It's actually a movie we didn't touch on that's supposed to be coming out in November that's already got the still out as far as something that looks like it could be an Oscar contender, but she's portraying Judy Garland in that biopic. Maybe it's going to be a return to prominence for her, but God, Cold Mountain was boring.
Yeah, it was a little boring, but the performances were good.
Yes, yes, they were good. But God, that movie was boring.
This was early Oscar critics, Mike, but the performance.
Great performance. boring movie.
2001, Halle Berry was in Monsters Ball, broke my heart, yes. Ripped it out and stepped on it. And we've reviewed Jennifer Connelly's performance in A Beautiful Mind. We thought she stole the movie.
She was awesome.
She was great in that film.
Yeah.
So those are the five nominees. Again, Blanchett, Nyong'o in 13, Cotillard, Swinton in 7, Mirren and Hudson in 6, Theron and Zellweger in 5, and Halle Berry and Jennifer Connelly in 2001. Mike, do you have a winner here?
I feel like I'm doing Kate Blanchett a disservice, having not seen Blue Jasmine. I got to get on that, because I feel like if I had, that would be my winner. But like we said, as far as things I've seen, Helen Mirren and Jennifer Hudson, that's my stand-up for me. That's the kind of sticks out.
I agree, yeah. Actually. I agree. 2006, The Queen was a solid movie. I really like it. It's a great going-to-sleep movie, by the way. This will put you out like a light in 20 minutes every time, and it's perfect. Jennifer Hudson and Dreamgirls, that's a movie I don't like, but her performance, her bursting on the scene like that was otherworldly.
I really thought Eddie Murphy was going to get the Oscar that year for that performance, but it wasn't to be.
That was a narrative. All right, so let's go to the fellas. 2013, Matthew McConaughey and Jared Leto in Dallas Buyers Club. Great performance.
Leto was so good. McConaughey was great, obviously, but Leto was so good in that movie.
Yes, sir. 2012, Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln.
Ugh.
Christoph Waltz in Django Unchained.
Jesus.
We did a Best Supporting Actor pod for Christoph Waltz, of course, and we could not help but talk about Daniel Day-Lewis in Lincoln for much of that time.
Unbelievable.
That's how good he was. 2008, and again, these years, I don't know times or dates, but 2008, we had Sean Penn in Milk. Is it the 07, 08? Is it 08, 09? I didn't write it down, but Sean Penn in Milk.
I think it's 08, 09.
Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight.
See?
That's a good one.
That's a great one. Sean Penn was very good in Milk. I still think Mickey Rourke should have won the Oscar.
Oh, that's right. You had your other good wrestling movie in there.
Yeah.
Oh, too bad. 2007, and I guess this is 07-08, of which Michelle Foes refers to. We have Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood and Javier Bardem in No Country for Old Men, a movie which you did not like, No Country.
I hated it. I absolutely hated it. And I know that's because I was young and foolish, and I keep bringing this up every time it comes up. I know if I were to go back to it and watch it now, I would absolutely love it, but I don't want to because I don't like being wrong.
Talk about anticlimactic, though. That movie is anticlimactic.
It's kind of built into the plot to be that way. It's kind of, it has to be, especially after what happens in the middle of the movie, going from Act 2 to Act 3, I guess, or Act 1 to Act 2, I forget which it is, but where you don't see anything, and then you're just kind of there. So, I have problems with it, but I haven't seen it in a while. We got to go back and do that. We might have to do a retrospective on that.
2006, Jamie Foxx. Ray Charles and Ray.
It's phenomenal.
Morgan Freeman and Million Dollar Baby.
Only movie that ever made me cry.
That's the
Million
one.
Dollar Baby. Actually shed tears of sadness and despair.
Now, can you describe to me your crying? Was it like, or was it just like, you know, just tears?
It was a lot of stuffling.
You just couldn't believe what was happening. Oh, you're just going, oh my God.
Heartbroken. Absolutely heartbroken.
I want to
make a joke
that.
About having somebody kill me here, but I think that'd be a spoiler, so never mind.
Okay. But no, I want to see you cry at some point during our podcast.
That's good.
And drink your tears. No.
Then disagree with me here and pick someone I won't.
All right. I think Michelle Foes is correct. I think Daniel Day-Lewis and Javier Bardem, 2007 is probably the best. It's one of the Day-Lewis combos, in my opinion, because he is so good, and then Javier Bardem is so creepy, and they do prove the thesis statement that it is No Country for Old Men in that film.
Oscar runner-up, who's another Oscar podcast out there,
we like
just that. Talked about, they wanted people to rank their best lead actor performances from the last, I think, decade or so. And to me, like, you look at the list, there's Eddie Redmayne's on there, obviously this year Rami Malek, there's a lot of people. There's no, you can't touch what Daniel Day-Lewis did in Lincoln. That's the best lead acting performance.
It is.
I think maybe of ever.
Maybe
that's
ever.
An interesting conversation, but that wasn't Daniel Day-Lewis. That was Abraham Lincoln. We somehow reanimated the 16th president of the United States, got him on set for a Spielberg movie, and he acted perfectly just long enough before we could put him back in the grave.
True.
I have to pick that movie because I think it might be the greatest lead acting performance ever. And Christoph Waltz should have probably been a lead actor in Django.
Should have. And Leo should have been a supporting.
Right.
No question. in terms of comparing those two. But you're right.
But I mean, your pick there, Javier Bardem, is probably the best supporting acting performance of the last however many years as well.
Yeah, and maybe it's your impression of Daniel Plainview and There Will Be Blood that keeps growing on me. But every text message...
Say that you have a milkshake.
This is every day of my life, folks.
But... And I have a straw that goes all the way.
Anyway, this was fun. Please send us more questions, MMOers. We had a blast with this. I had a blast looking through Oscar history. Awesome. I almost went like forever and did the whole thing.
That would have taken days.
That would have been too hard, but I did enjoy going back to 2000 and clicking around Wikipedia there, remembering all those films. So thank you, Michelle Foes, and thank you, MMOers, for such creativity this week. This was awesome. We got a box office update
Let's
now.
Let's talk box office update, and we have the top 10 to finish what happened this weekend, March 1st through 3rd, the numbers right now as they stand. How to Train Your Dragon finished up making $30 million this weekend. It's up to $97 million as far as its total box office goes, which means it made about 67 during its opening, which is the highest box office a How to Train Your Dragon movie has made yet. I know we talked during the Oscars lead up that we were kind of worried about those numbers, but that seems like it's well on its way to over $200 million domestically easily.
Counter programming works, and a lot of kids went to see this when a lot of parents are watching Oscar movies at home, or a lot of nerds like us are watching Oscar movies at home. $375 worldwide off a $129 million budget, so yeah, that thing is already making good money here. We had Tyler Perry's A Madea Family Funeral in second place with $27 million, Mike. This is just a domestic gross as of this moment. Apparently, it's the last Madea movie.
That's how they're selling it, and I think the idea is that it's going to be a, Madea is going to be put down or dead or deceased by the end of this. I don't know that I buy that.
It's her funeral?
It's the fourth highest grossing Madea movie ever, as far as an opening weekend goes. These things just make money. The Madea franchise overall, over its run, has made over $500 million in box office. So Tyler Perry knows how to print money with these.
He's a mogul, man. But none of them get good reviews. This is a 27% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's immune. It's a Teflon series.
I am such a snob that I just don't... I have so many movies to see that get good reviews that we count towards our basically our Oscar lists.
Yeah, sure.
And it's just like impossible, but I guess
well, maybe this is the year that we push Madea to win Best Lead Actress.
And we do a
Madea... Tyler Perry does the gender crossover thing.
We do a Madea series rewatch for two white idiots. That would be perfect.
Yeah.
Alita Battle Angel came in third, made about $7 million, Mike. It is now up to $350 million worldwide. So that is a good take at the end of the day off of a $170 million budget after a couple weeks. So it should kind of get into the black.
Yeah, but it's not nearly the money that they thought it would make. I mean, it's only $72 million domestically. It's relying on that international box office. I'm sure it didn't want to do that this early in its run. It's only been out for 3 weeks, only making less than $10 million right now in its third week. I don't know. 300 and some odd million's nice, but then you factor in the $170 million production budget that went with it. That's probably not a good sign. Robert Rodriguez has been in a bit of a funk.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we were excited for this one. We thought maybe that was going to be the first Oscar-type movie of 2019, but the Metascores were bad right out the gate, and nobody was going to see it.
Still might get visual effects at the end of the day. Maybe. Those are pretty special, it looks like. The Lego Movie 2, the second part, $6 million in fourth place. That is now up to $152 million worldwide. That is not great. They don't have a production budget listed, which I think is sizable at the end of the day. So maybe the Lego Movie 2 losing money? How is that possible? They just had the two spinoff movies, Lego Batman, Lego Ninjago, that did well to make this movie. They figured they were going to do great, right? But How Do You Train Your Dragon just kind of overshadowed it, I guess.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting stories of the early part of 2019. We thought that was a surefire, at least for animated feature. It may still be at the end of the day. The first Lego movie had a budget of 60 to 65 million, according to Wikipedia. So you figure this one's probably a little more, if not substantially bigger. Those numbers aren't great, but the box office numbers overall, there haven't been a lot of big moving. Number five on the list on the week is Green Book, which made 4.7 million. That's up to about 76 million domestically, but Green Book is benefiting, like every Oscar movie is benefiting right now, from not only the higher box office because of the Oscars just happened, but the studios also released it in more theaters this week. I mean, Green Book alone was up in 1,400 more theaters than it was last week.
Which is not a great haul considering that amount of theater.
It's not, it's made, it's not a big movie, right?
Right.
I mean, how many people are actually rushing out just because of the Oscars? If you're watching the Oscars, you've probably already seen it, haven't you?
Probably, but I definitely worked for it because it was like 11th or 12th the week before.
Yeah.
It's up to $188 million worldwide now off of $20-something million budget, so it did make a lot of money at the end of the day. It did become somewhat of a popular film because of its Oscar run and its award season run here. So, you know, it makes some sense. It typically happens. Fighting With My Family was in 6th. This is only up to $14 million domestically. It hasn't gone worldwide yet. We're thinking about reviewing it.
Yeah, we are. It's kind of weird because it's gotten such great reviews and yet it's a little bit stagnant at the box office. I wonder if it's going to turn into one of those that just kind of pitters out and is a good movie without making a lot of noise, but we're a little bit, frankly, we're desperate to get some kind of Oscar contender because we've been spoiled the last couple of years this early in the year.
We're hoping something really breaks through. I'm thinking it's going to happen sooner than later though with the slate we have the rest of March. So
92% for Fighting With My Family, yeah. Certified Fresh, 88% audience score. People that have seen it have loved it, but it's just a matter of not enough people are getting out to see it.
Screw them. Let's go see it. Let's put pumping on our end. So it's a wrestling movie after all. We haven't seen a good wrestling movie in forever since Mickey Rourke's film, right?
Probably.
So, all right. So we gotta ask ourselves if we care about other stuff.
Yeah, let's talk about it. The Do You Care segment of MMO Weekly. This is where we take lesser known news stories of the week and ask each other, do we, should we, or will we care about them? And the way we usually start the Do You Care sections is talking about the upcoming releases this week. And Mike, it's kind of a big week, finally, for March 8th, the releases that are scheduled on IMDb, say Captain Marvel, Gloria Bell, and The Kid, going Gloria Bell and The Kid being limited because Captain Marvel will be the dominant story. Do you care?
I do care.
You better.
Very much so. We got a couple episodes about Captain Marvel coming up for you, so I'll save a lot of my caring till then, because I've done a lot of writing for Captain Marvel, so it's been fun. Gloria Bell, this is the Julianne Moore film. This is 100% on 18 reviews as of last night on Rotten Tomatoes. 90 Metascore, but only a 6.6 IMDb audience rating. Trailer looks interesting, kind of, you know, it's a character piece. 100%er though, you know, she's been an Academy Award nominated actress. Maybe, you never know. It's unlikely that something would carry through momentum from a March or an April release at this stage. We saw it last year with a lot of those platform releases at that stage, from Leave No Trace all the way to First Reformed. You know, one got a screenplay, but it is difficult. The Kid is directed by Vincent D'Onofrio. I can never pronounce his name. I just learned that the little comma or parenthesis, what is that?
It's an apostrophe.
Apostrophe, thank you. I should know that. The apostrophe is an N sign, or is an N sound. My God, my brain today. I didn't know that. D'Onofrio. No,
that's fine, man.
Apostrophe means N.
This is like Planet Fitness. Judgment-free zone.
Starring Ethan Hawke.
That's why we're critics.
Starring Ethan Hawke and Chris Pratt in a disgusting beard. Chris Pratt,
I haven't seen it,
has the grossest beard. Watch the trailer. I'm intrigued by all three of these movies, and I'm going to try and catch them at some point this spring. So, yeah, I do care. Mike, do you care about Glenn Close being involved? They're fast-tracking the Sunset Boulevard musical into a movie.
It's finally, it should have happened a while ago. I'm always scared about taking like the prestigious Hollywood properties and remaking them. And the only way I would be okay with remaking the Gloria Swanson Sunset Boulevard, the Billy Wilder picture there from 1950, which again was part of our lost episode there, reviewing the best actress race of 1950, which was loaded. The only way I would have been okay with it is if they casted Glenn Close to reprise the Norma Desmond role, which they seem to finally have done, and that they linked a director to it. Rob Ashford is going to get the job. He doesn't really have a lot on his resume as far as directing films. He's done a lot with choreography in a lot of different, which you think he's a Broadway guy. He's directed Broadway plays, but he's also directed a lot of choreography in a lot of award shows. I'm interested to see how he translates to dealing with someone like Glenn Close, especially now where you have not only the historic property of Sunset Boulevard, but you have the added weight and the added scrutiny that's going to come with Glenn Close obviously going for an Oscar with this, right? I mean, this could be her last chance.
There's a lot of pressure on it. She could, I know we heard people say it's their last chance, and we've interviewed great minds that
yes.
that think, unfortunately, it could be. But I still think, you know, she puts out good stuff every few years. She's got a shot. That's my opinion.
I think she's going to nail this. Yeah. She is terrifying.
I mean, look, bottom line is this is tried and true. You take theatrical directors mm-hmm. on Broadway, et cetera, and you turn them into feature film directors. This has happened
right.
a million times sure. from Sam Mendes to Martin McDonagh to everybody. This is to the typical path that people take in Hollywood in many a case. So I think it totally could work. They just got to have the right guy for it. And who knows? I mean, if he is or not.
And Ashford himself is no stranger to big productions. He was involved in such as the Cinderella live action remake, A Million Ways to Die in the West, Ted 2, Murder on the Orient Express remake.
Okay.
He's no stranger to film. And he's also directed a lot of those live musicals that have kind of had their revitalization on cable lately. He did, I think he did Peter Pan Live, I want to say. He did Peter Pan Live, The Sound of Music Live. He knows what he's doing. He's worked with serious actors before. He's worked with Kenneth Branagh before as well, directed him in a special. So, fingers crossed. Listen, I'm okay with Glenn Close being upset at this Oscars if it means she's going to get the best actress for her portrayal of Norma Desmond. I'm okay with that.
That would be cool.
That would be awesome, cool. Yeah.
And we love that original film. I'd be very curious to see it in a musical form.
Who are you starring? Who's the William Holden character for you to be alongside?
Oh, my God. If it's...
I got a name.
I don't know. Who do you got?
MMO favorite, Armie Hammer.
Oh, Armie Hammer would be perfect.
Let's go, baby.
100%, Mike. That's great. But can he sing and dance?
Could you see Call Me By Your Name?
Can he sing? I don't know if he can sing. He's probably in something.
Just put those dance moves and Call Me By Your Name. We're fine.
Just get a Broadway singer to, you know, take his voice, I guess. All right, fine.
Bring in Rami Malek again. Yeah,
sure.
Netflix is looking at a full theatrical release for The Irishman. Do you care?
I do care.
So does Steven Spielberg.
This is fascinating. I noticed that Netflix seemed to have the rights to Dee Reese, The Last Thing He Wanted, Soderbergh's The Laundromat, David Mikod's and Timothy Chalamet's film, The King.
Timothy Chalmers.
Timothy Chalmers. I care about all those movies and if they will hit theaters, which
sure.
is very interesting because that's the Amazon model. They're out in theaters, then they come to Amazon. That's very different than the model Netflix has been doing right now. So this THR article by Rebecca Keegan points out a lot of fascinating things about this scenario with The Irishman. Number one, Scorsese has asked them for a theatrical release. This is old news. We've talked about this a while back on a Hot Takes episode or so. But bottom line is Netflix has only really given like 2 and 3 week windows for theatrical releases thus far, and they have not reported the box office grosses, which they've been against. Roma last year, when it was touted as the next film, the big Oscar push, in trailers it said only in select theaters or in its teaser or whatever. This movie says in theaters. So when we saw the teaser for The Irishman, it just said in theaters next fall. And that is a change already. So I wonder if it's already going to happen, which is intriguing to me because I do want to see a $200 million Scorsese film on a big screen.
You are a big advocate of the cinematic experience. I was against the idea, but I do think such a thing exists. And I do think there is value in going to see a movie in theaters. Maybe not as much as our next story, as the subject of our next story. But
yeah, but I'm a story junkie at the same time. So I like feature film story structures. So if you give me a feature film story structure and I watch it on my big screen TV at home or even my laptop when I'm in bed, I mean, that works too. I'm with both watch methods. I think if you have the production values of a Scorsese film, typically that's going to play very well in an immersive big screen experience.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point.
I would like that. Mike, Steven Spielberg is talking that trash about Netflix. Do you care, man?
No, I don't. I'm tired of this. Yeah. Like, he does this. We covered this last year when it happened. He's done it for a couple years in a row. He doesn't think that films that only go to Netflix should be eligible for Academy Awards. Like, old man yells at cloud, right? Like, right. We get it. You don't like new cinema. You got this thing against it. That's fine. But why do we take the post-Academy Awards week to just hate on everything? I hate how that's a thing. We hate on Green Book. When we had the whole lead-up to hate on Green Book, Steven Spielberg hates on Netflix and streaming services. Who is it bothering? This is where cinema is going, right? You're not going to stop progress.
The thing is, I wonder if he fears that inevitability.
I'm sure that's part of it. I'm sure of it.
Do we fear that inevitability? That you don't? There's only select art house movies because it costs a lot of money to have a movie house, to have an art house. It costs a lot of money for distributors to have that experience and make it readily available. You know, flash forward 10 years from now, are we going to be disgusted over the fact that 70% of movie theaters close because Netflix and Amazon and Disney and whoever else who are buying up all of the real estate in the movie business are taking control over this? And is Spielberg kind of being an oracle here that this inevitability is not that great? You know, we've worked with TV for years. Let's put this in the TV category. Let's not just allow it to come into the Oscars. To play devil's advocate a little bit, I see some of his points, and I wonder if the Oscars should distinguish themselves. I don't know the answer. I think I kind of care about what he's saying because he's a big name, Mike.
Well,
he's made theatrical releases.
This is Steven Spielberg we're talking
about. An art form. Yeah. I mean, you watch Jaws in an immersive movie theater,
sure,
or anything that he's done, it's different than watching it at home.
So, one, I think we're getting towards a happy medium with that idea, and that anything that is being an awards contender probably, you know, I don't know that it needs the festival circuit, but it's nice to have it, and it certainly helps its cause. And we've seen Netflix already put these pictures into the festival circuit. We've seen them put these pictures, like you just said, with Roma, into theaters for a limited run.
It's fascinating because right now Amazon is not releasing Cold War on Blu-ray or DVD. Cold War is just coming to Amazon Prime. So maybe it's on VOD available that way. We'll find out March 22nd. But this is something to keep track of because maybe that model can work where a movie does not get a DVD release for your home viewing and you can only watch it on Amazon or Netflix. And I wonder if they can kind of gain the rights and make themselves profitable in that way. Basically, you see it in theaters. Or if you're going to watch it at home, the only place you can do it is on Netflix. But the bottom line is, for Netflix to get something out of this, or as much as they want for a $200 million budget, it's got to make money in theaters, and then it has to add value to their brand. If, like Amazon's been finding out, you just have the movies come out in theaters, then they come out on VOD, and then it's available on Amazon Prime, I don't think that catalog works as well for them.
What about the idea that distributors just buy movie theaters, these small art house theaters, and that they have the rights to these films, they have exclusive rights to show them in the theaters they own? I mean, I don't think it'd be a profitable endeavor, but if they care that much about keeping things in theaters, well, cut out the middleman altogether.
Just think they don't care about the theater-going experience. They're
I don't know that they don't.
But the whole point of this is they're basically being dragged into and forced by Martin Scorsese and Spielberg and by Cannes, by Oscars. I mean, eventually they are capitulating extent.
If they didn't, then why doesn't Universal start their own streaming service? Why doesn't MGM start their own streaming service?
Well, Disney is.
Well, Disney is, but Disney's a conglomerate. Disney's like not just movies.
Well, right now the theater model is still working. It's still making, you know, great.
Which is why I think the happy medium is where we're headed, where we have that limited run type deal.
Yeah, we're not in danger of losing theatrical movie going anytime in the near future right now.
But I would think the distributors, the bigger studios that are just pretty much movies and nothing else, I think they do care about the theatrical experience. I think they need it to survive. So I think if you're worry about paying rights and fees to different theaters and having licenses with different theaters, why not just own the whole ball of wax
yourself?
I just
think it's a rough business. And you have to break in. You have to do a lot of work. Just look at what MoviePass, the hell they've gone through. So I kind of disagree with you there because I think they're concerned about their subscription package and getting the most subscribers they can for home viewing. I don't know which one of us is right at the end of the day. Maybe you do have some theatrical movie-going enthusiasts there that have pushed all the bigwigs at Netflix to not just give it a 1 week or a 2 week, but now we have Scorsese. Let's see if we can make $100 million at the box office or $200 million. Let's see if we can make box office, and then maybe we have that exclusive rights for when it comes to home video. Let's see if that model can work. And
sure.
Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. We're going to find out this fall.
It also doesn't sound like the movie industry is in trouble all that much anyway, because as much as the mid-budgets might be in trouble, which is I don't know that we believe that as much, but the idea that movie going is in trouble is a little preposterous when you look at all the total numbers for the year and how even last year the quarters kept rising as far as compared to the year before.
It's a bit relative because costs and inflation.
Yeah, inflation has a lot to do with it. Yeah, well. I
wonder
that.
If you know if you took inflation into it, how those numbers would
compare. I would be curious to see that too, and I would like the website to get on that because I don't know how to do that kind of math.
That's hard
so
math.
So if somebody can do that and tell me, I can report it and sound
please,
smart.
Please.
go ahead, Mike.
Mike, we have a new Ghostbusters film, and I missed the news entirely when Jason Reitman, son of Ivan Reitman, who directed the first film or two, he jumped on board doing his dad's property there, which I think is really cool. We have Finn Wolfhard from Stranger Things signed on, and we have Carrie Coon from The Leftovers, Gone Girl, etc., Fargo TV series, great and everything. Do you care?
No.
No?
I really don't. I know the old ones are going to come back. Ghostbusters has never been that property that, like, oh my God, I'm crazy about it. I know it is to some people, and that's
yeah,
great.
Sure.
I don't like the way the whole franchise has been handled ever since the first reboot happened a couple years ago with the all-women reboot. I don't like that's kind of being cast aside entirely. And essentially, the trolls win, right?
Well, here's the thing. Bottom line is, the Ghostbusters remake sucked.
Yeah.
It's a bad movie.
I mean, and I know it didn't make a lot of money, and I know it's more of a box office thing, and the industry doesn't really give a shit at all about what
sucked,
the trolls say.
And it didn't make money.
I get it.
So if it's a failure, even though you had talent there and you had some, it had its moments. I liked parts of it.
Right.
I like Kate McKinnon's character. I thought the it was funny with the whole Chris Hemsworth character as well. I mixing that up. I just thought the spectacle didn't work. That movie was a problem for me. I just didn't review it well myself.
It just bothers me that we need to, like, the need is there to remake this so quickly after that one.
I think they're trying to maybe, while they have the rights, get it correctly. So this seems like a grandson of the old guys, and they're taking that storyline again. Like Finn Wolfhard could be, you know, Egon's grandkid,
right,
and he's trying to honor his grandpa, and you can have like basically the whole cast of Stranger Things take this thing over.
That would be fun if they actually turned they melded those two worlds where they had the Stranger.
I would sign brothers. Up for that. But Jason Reitman, yeah, obviously he's a great director. He made a couple movies last year that were very well done in The Front Runner and Tully, and he's obviously made a ton of great movies. He hasn't done the big action film yet that I can recall. So that'll be a little bit different.
It sounds
for
like
him.
You're placating to the fucking trolls. I know they're not directly, but there was so much loud noise from these stupid neckbeard people that were like, how could women take over this property, blah, 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 when the reboot came out. And so now, because you're doing this so quickly after that one, it's like, oh, we want your money. Like, here, we'll service to you guys. Yeah. We'll give you guys what
Bottom
you want.
Bottom line is, if that movie was a good film that nobody saw,
you're absolutely right.
I would give you credence to that argument 100%. Like, if that's an A-minus movie, and if that was the first man of Ghostbuster films, where it's a great movie but people aren't seeing it for whatever reason, I would be pissed off about it. It's a bad movie.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to say we need to make a second one. I mean, I would get behind it. Let's get it right. But
I just want to, you know, I wish it wasn't so transparent that they actually gave a shit about about being so greedy, I guess.
Worse movies have done much better at the box office. There's no question. And if it was a success at the box office, if they made a sequel, I'd be rooting for them to get it right. Because they had, you know, they had the kernels for that. Like, Kate McKinnon's character in that movie is hilarious.
Yeah.
Hilarious, and Melissa McCarthy's obviously great in a ton of stuff. So it sucks. I mean, you can reboot it however you want. You know, I think you need representation for everyone. I think that's where we're going, especially with these tentpole pictures, and that's necessary and wonderful. And finally, goddamn it! So let's do that. So if you have a cast of kids who are the grandkids of the real Ghostbusters, you don't need them to be all boys. You don't, right?
No, I agree.
So
I agree.
They can make this work and make it representative. It right. And I don't know.
Guillermo del Toro, Mike, decides to make a female ninja movie, Zenbato, with Bad Robot, the J.J. Abrams studio there. Guillermo del Toro is going to write and direct it as well. Do you care?
I do care because apparently he's been working on it for 6 years, and they've kept it very quiet at Bad Robot, which is kind of cool and intriguing. This is the first I've heard of it, so I am intrigued, and I wish I had a beard to stroke.
Didn't Del Toro say he was going to take a bunch of years off to be a producer now and not direct anything?
He took a year off, yeah. And he produced like the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
All right.
Okay, so Leaving Neverland comes out tonight, Mike. We're recording this Sunday afternoon. This is the Michael Jackson documentary dropping on HBO. It's a two-parter. It comes out tonight and tomorrow. It's supposedly filled with some pretty damning evidence. Just the trailer alone looks pretty damning. How much do you care?
It's appointment viewing, as far as I'm concerned. I was a big Michael Jackson fan of his music. I knew the guy was always a little out there and weird. I think it's really one of the more fascinating things on how, upon his death, we all were willing to look past this, like, all these horror stories and just remember him for the music, which I think is, I don't know if that's indicative of us as a, you know, we just want to feel good about ourselves and the people we look up to as a country or what it is, but it's I think it's important to remember this guy may not have been a good guy at all.
A lot of rumors going on out there. I'm curious to watch the documentary. It sounds like people are coming forward and they're speaking firsthand about what happened.
A lot of legal battles, too. I've seen a couple lawsuits come up as a result of this, and I've seen a contingent of Michael Jackson fans that are going to try to bomb the reviews online. There's that kind of momentum, too. You could say the same about Captain Marvel fanboys, even though it's a different animal there. People trying to bomb the reviews on the IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes. I think that's stupid, really stupid. But you know, we're going to see. I'm interested, but just scared.
Scared, and I agree.
Mike, last one here. Rami Malek is in final negotiations to play the villain in Bond 25. Do you care?
I care in the sense that Bond 25 is finally getting momentum.
Yeah,
and it's cool that Rami Malek is involved to play a villain because I think Rami Malek is generally a scary dude. From Mr. Robot, from he's a cult follower in The Master. You know, he can play a scary dude.
Yes, he can. Yes,
and I genuinely believe in his ability to get this right. And, I'm in.
I agree. I co-sign everything you say, and I'm very interested to see that, and I wish he would win the best actor for that, and not for Bohemian Rhapsody, but we can't go back in time now, can we? And I think that's a little ridiculous. It's 2018, 2019 even. Where's our time travel? Let's get it together, scientists. Let's move on to trailer thoughts. All right, three trailers we're going to rip through quick that came out this week, or we're getting to this week because we get to go back to, like, watching normal stuff instead of miring ourselves in just the abyss that is Oscars coverage for Oscar week. So, Mike, let's talk about them.
Detective Pikachu Trailer 2.
This is going to win Best Picture.
Mike, it's fun. It's a fun trailer. Lots of Pokemon in there. I am not this generation. I missed it. I'm too old.
I think you only missed it by like a week. You keep saying you're too old for it, but I was very much into it.
Yeah, I'm 3 years older than you.
Yeah.
It's just like my little brother's thing, and I was just like the tough guy. I didn't get into it.
How did this get greenlit? If you're going to introduce Pokemon to a real world thing, like, and have them interact with humans in real life, and how is this the approach?
Here's the thing, though. As like a movie trailer, I think it's working.
It looked awesome. It looked absolutely awesome.
Ryan Reynolds is doing that voice, and he's making a lot of jokes, and works.
We got more about the plot in this trailer. It's the second one. He's legitimately investigating a death, so the Detective Pikachu thing fits. He's investigating some person's death.
But it's not too heavy, because they think he's still alive, so that I'm sure that's going to happen.
Maybe. I don't know.
We don't know.
You got to look at Mewtwo, too, at the end of there. That was the big Pokemon at the end. That's kind of cool. So the graphics look great. They really, really did, especially for introducing all these, having the blurred lines between making something that resembles the Pokemon still on a 2D image, but bringing it into a 4D reality, or however many Ds we deal with.
A kajillion bajillion dollars this movie's going to make.
Absolutely, and it should win Best Picture. Let's move on. Speaking of things that we're scared of, Dark Phoenix had its second trailer.
Yeah, I think the trailer's a little bit better than what this movie's going to be. I kind of like the trailer. I like that they got stakes. I know you're not happy with the graphics.
Well, no. I think of the three trailers we talk about, this one had the worst graphics, and that's not a good sign at all that a 20th Century Fox production putting out its eighth movie in a franchise felt the need to kind of have worse graphics than Hellboy or Detective Pikachu.
Yeah.
So that's an issue. I'm an X-Men franchise apologist, though. I loved X-Men Apocalypse.
I rewatched it. It was not good.
No, I don't care.
There was a mountain of metal that they just... And then there was a big fight, and it looked ridiculous.
This movie could be... anything, and I'll still probably like
I
it.
I love Days of Future Past.
Days of Future Past was great.
I loved a couple movies in there. Like, the first one was fine. The second one was cool, even though the story didn't work great, but it was the fighting and the action was great. The third one was okay, but I am not a fan of the new series as much as I am. Like, I didn't like the school one. I thought that was really... on the nose.
I don't know what they're doing here, because we know all these characters live. We've seen their adult versions in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
You know? And we already had, the original trilogy already did some Dark Phoenix stuff. So I don't know how this is. Maybe this is the introduction of that character, and it's supposed to, maybe one of the X-Men dies along the way.
I'm happy for Sansa Stark of Game of Thrones that she gets to actually have some real power.
I am too. And that she gets a big movie, you know, as the star, as the lead. I think that's
cool. She's scary. I mean, she's doing a lot of things. You have Jessica Chastain manipulating her in the trailer. I like that dynamic.
Again, this movie could be anything, and I'll defend it, so...
I think it's got a chance, and I wonder if the Disney influence on the brand, now that they've bought Fox Marvel, I know they haven't secured everything yet, or really put their hand in it yet. I wonder if it's helping, though. Then again, Fox has had a good year on their own, right? Big time year, so.
So the graphics should be better, right?
Yeah.
All right, Hellboy, second trailer. This one just looks absurdly good. It just looks so absurd. Period. And good.
I love the burning red band trailer logo right up front. I laughed hard twice.
So did I.
At this trailer. Two great jokes in here. So we get a little bit of an origin story, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
It looks super bloody. You have fighting monsters this whole trailer,
which is
awesome.
Two people literally kissing in a downpour of blood around them.
I'm guessing it's a dream, but it might be funnier if it's not a dream. I'm still not a huge fan of these effects. I watched it on my laptop, though. It looked better on your laptop just now, I will say.
That's the old MacBook touch, baby. You got the... The trailers, the graphics look better than the X-Men one, which I think is a big feather in the cap of Hellboy. Maybe not as good as Detective Pikachu, I don't know, but I'm excited. These are three, these look like, you know, X-Men aside, I could see people having their complaints about that. I'm an apologist, but for me, these are three legitimately fun movies that I'm excited for.
He's breaking balls this entire trailer.
David
of
Harbour.
Of his friends, of his enemies.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time before he's a bona fide movie star, and this might be it.
He's just oozing charisma.
Yeah.
So it's perfect. And they got some quippy dialogue involved, even with the exposition part, which is fun to see. Yeah, I think this could be a hit, or at least something that we really enjoy watching. We may have to do like a mini series rewatch before this one comes out.
See by skip these three trailers.
Ooh, tough call. I'm going to buy Hellboy.
Oh, really? Okay.
I like Hellboy more than Pikachu. Right now, I'm going to say Pikachu I'm actually seeing, and I would skip Dark Phoenix just because of kind of the rumors surrounding
it. Yeah, I'm very worried about the production rumors as well. I'm skipping Dark Phoenix as well. I would buy Detective Pikachu. I'm really impressed with what I see so far.
I'm in favor of all three trailers.
I didn't love
the first Dark Phoenix trailer. The Detective Pikachu just kind of freaked me out the first time.
It's very jarring.
Trailer.
Yeah, it's very jarring.
Ryan Reynolds, what the hell? Now I'm over that, and I'm liking it. I thought that was a hell of a trailer.
Guys, we want to know your thoughts about these trailers and about every news story that we touched on this week. This has been your Mike, and Oscar setup to get you ready for that Hollyweird week that's coming down the pipeline. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything you want us to cover, we'd love hearing from you. Like I said earlier, our social media is Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM and Oscar on Twitter, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, Mike, and Oscar.com, and Mike, and Oscar on Reddit. We are available everywhere you hear podcasts. Tune in, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Google Play, iTunes, Spotify, etc., etc. Just type in Mike, and Oscar. You will see our smiling faces waving back at you. Michael, another week kicked off in the books here. Let's give them some words of wisdom for their commutes.
Maybe this is just the claim of 100% accuracy for our way too early Oscar prediction. Predictions talking, But I'm really proud of us. You know, we put together the 10-day stretch where we put out episodes 10 days in a row. This, like, looked like a nothing episode at the beginning of the week, and we put this thing together, and there's a lot of stuff that came out, and it truly was a Hollyweird week that we got coming up, and a Hollywood week that we had a lot to talk about, some deep discussions here and a couple debates, and it was wide, it was deep. We had the audience really bring it, and I'm super proud of them too. So thank you, and I'm proud of the whole MMO empire, which is still a fiefdom, but we've been growing like crazy, and just thanks to everybody for listening.
Yes, very much thank you. If you could find your time to leave us a little review on iTunes, we would very much appreciate that as well. Guys, when reality sucks, keep watching movies with us. Come over here, and we will see you in a couple days for the next one.